This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
This is The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark. And today I have with me in studios Jahaba Sadiq, founder of the Malaysian Insight, as well as Professor Dr. Tajuddin Mohamed Razdi, professor of architecture at UCSI University and social commentator. Welcome, both of you, to the show this morning. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So it's certainly been an eventful week in Malaysian politics, culminating in the swearing-in ceremony of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin as our country's eighth prime minister yesterday morning. Now, you've both shared your thoughts with us over the past couple of days, and you can find our most recent conversations on the BFM app as well as on Spotify. But now I'd like to turn our attention to just a reflection of how it is that we got here. You know, it's been a very eventful week. And so what was the turning point? When did things begin to swing over to Tan Sri Muhyiddin's side, given that initially Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad seemed to have the upper hand in this political turmoil?
So it's very interesting. I think Dr. Mahathir's changing stance over the week, first resigning as Prime Minister and then offering to lead, I won't call it unity government, but a cross-party government, just changed the dynamics of it in contrast to Pakatan Harapan just nominating Anwar Ibrahim. And Bersatu, UMNO, PAS being rather consistent about Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin being their prospective Prime Minister's choice. So I think it came to a point that GPS from Sarawak said they stuck with Tan Sri Muhyiddin because Dr. Mahathir kept changing his stance, whether he wanted to continue or he quit and that's it. He's walking away from everything. And I think that happened somewhere midweek and hardened into very divergent lines among the coalition. And I think the king made a decision based on that, you know, that there was one consistent grouping against one that kept changing its stance.
And Professor, what about you? What, in your view, was the turning point over the past week in politics?
Well, if the question is when is the turning point about all this, it was 9th May 2018. It's not last week. Okay.
Why do
we
you say
came
that?
We came into the election. We already knew there was a risk of getting PBBM, who were mostly from UMNO. And the only people I trust in PBBM was Mazli Malik and Syed Saddiq. Those are only two people. The others are people we actually know. So I was expecting the change of government to actually occur within a year. And I said that if something is not done, then we're going to have a new government. I was wrong. It was like almost 2 years. Okay. So I think I'm quite surprised at the politicians in Pakatan Harapan. I thought they were veterans like Lim Kit Siang and Anwar Ibrahim and all these people. They did not extend any olive oil or something like olive branch to the other parties like MCA and Gerakan and even GBS and all this kind of thing, right? Because that's how you are supposed to be in politics. You know, you have this batch of people who might turn against you, and yet you did nothing political in terms of doing this thing in the backdrop. So it was really a bad.
I think consistently throughout the entire 1 year, 9 months, and 15 days of Pakatan Harapan, they sort of kept their trust with Dr. Mahathir Mohamad and took his word for it because one of his age and you know, Dr. Mahathir Mohamad has always been consistent in what he is. I mean, in the sense, if he says it, he says it, right? I mean, I've met him many times, and he said he'll give it to Anwar Ibrahim, right? Having said that, I think the recent events, which he disclosed yesterday, that the fact that the string of defeats in Pakatan Harapan's by-election campaign sort of eroded his party's confidence in, particularly with DAP, sort of changed that dynamic, you know. But having said that, you know, you either believe Dr. Mahathir or you don't. For May 9th, they believed in him and he carried them through. So along the way, maybe they ignored signs. Maybe they didn't see that their partners in Bersatu were not too keen to work with them. I'm not sure. But, yeah, so I agree with you. May 9th was the turning point. And eventually, a lot of people on May 10th said, you know, this is not going to work.
Yeah.
You know?
But even outside of the opposition political parties, right, so there was the concern that Pakatan Harapan never managed to win the goodwill of the larger Malay community. So why was that? This is also despite a Bumiputra aligned shared prosperity vision. Mm. You know, what did they fail to do when it came to courting the Malay community?
Okay, can I go first?
Of course, sir.
Now, entire fault lies on Amanah. That's just the point that I want to make. I have always said that in my speeches. I blame totally on Amanah. Now, when Amanah came into the scene, I was also part of those who supported the idea that they break away from PAS. And I was excited on the idea of them having to go on their own. And I understood that they didn't have their grassroots and things like that. And they were not, they had to win in the mixed area rather than the Malay. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But once they were in government, they started becoming ministers. And I was asking, where are all the ceramah? I'm expecting ceramah every week or every 2 weeks at least. And if Mat Sabu and all these others, Mujahid, were very busy, where's your second line of ustaz or religious scholars to take on these religious issues? Because I wrote in my article, the Illusion of Power, that the battle has already shifted the ground to the mosque and to the WhatsApp in the phones.
Yeah.
And especially the mosque. And so, and I also predicted that Islam was going to be a center issue, which nobody actually believed that it was going to be. Now, this is the thing that after 2 years, with all the power of RTM, with all the power of the ministers and all that, you cannot still sway the Malay vote. Something is terribly wrong somewhere. And that's why I gave a fail mark to all the Amanah leaders that became ministers. And that is where we are. Where we are, we shouldn't be.
I think one of the other things is that post May 9th, a lot of middle class Malays felt they were either off the gravy train or off the queue to the gravy train, because you had a government that had a Chinese finance minister, and Lim Guan Eng was always blamed for a lot of things that the Malay Muslim community did not get, and this was a consistent theme that even Dr. Mahathir said. Tan Sri Muhyiddin mentioned this. So when you have a whole demographic of Malay Muslims who grew up coming out from the villages and becoming the middle class, be it in Shalam, Bangi, Tamantun, Damansara Heights, Bangsa, Monkera, they felt agitated, right? And I think that acceptance in that demographic was lower than the rest. We had a discussion with a professor before we came on air. We were talking about the fact that the rural Malays are fine either way. Mm. It's this group,
the middle class,
mm-hmm. that were not happy, and it extended to the government service too, because they were not happy with this government.
What about the moderate progressive Malay movement? Malay
What's
Muslim
that?
I mean, they do exist, Jahabat. And I mean, where does this new coalition leave them?
I think it's going to be a backlash for this unicorn or species called the modern, what do you call them? The moderate progressive Malays.
Don't forget liberal.
Liberal, right? When you put all those on them, you make them walking targets, really, right? I think they exist. They are around. You probably see them in still probably trying to sip their champagne surreptitiously. But, you know, I think it's going to take some time to regroup. You know, this is reality. I mean, we can hide all this, but this is happening in Malaysia. And it'll take some time to regroup because the conjecture now, the speculation now is that we are having a government that is very far to the right, very ethno-nationalist. It's their first day in power today, right? I think let's give them the benefit of the doubt. The middle-class Malays, the ones who, again, I was talking to a professor earlier, who keep going for their umrahs, I think they are the key to this. They could balance it and also work with the other communities. You know?
Well, I have a different perspective of that.
Uh-huh.
I think we should forget about the Malays. And in my article about let Sabah and Sarawak be the kings rather than a kingmaker, and I've always written and said that we have to shift the... I don't see... About 3 years ago, I called Lim Kit Siang I said, hey Lim, susah sangat lah. You just give this prime minister to the Sabah and Sarawak people lah. You know, he just laughed at it. You know, I mean, what is wrong with them taking the narrative?
I think they don't want.
There?
I think Sabahs and Sarawakians don't
That's
want.
Fine,
they're
but,
happy
but,
there.
But they offer dulu lah. You offer dulu whether they want not. Let's hear what they say. What I'm trying to do is to shift the narrative from Melayu Islam to something more bigger about this Bumiputra and all this Sabah
and Sarawak Malaysian,
and all that. More Malaysian, more Malaysian construct. And I think we need to do that. If not, we'll be in trouble for the next 50 years. And I don't even know how we can change this Malay middle class. It's not that easy unless you have a Zakir Naik. Give Zakir Naik some money and then let him go and campaign for your Rahmatan Lil Alamin concept. Okay, and that he has influence, you know, and I think you could do that if you can have the idea. But this is the thing that I thought lah.
And we'll be continuing this conversation in just a little while. I'm speaking with Jahaba Sadiq, founder of the Malaysian Insight, and Professor Dr. Tajuddin Mohamed Razdi, Professor of Architecture at UCSR University and social commentator. Be sure to stay tuned here on The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark. And today I have with me Jahaba Sadiq, founder of the Malaysian Insight, as well as Professor Dr. Tajuddin Mohamed Razdi, professor of architecture at UCSR University and social commentator. Now, earlier, gentlemen, we were speaking about the events which led us to this point in Malaysian politics, as well as a bit about where we are now. And there are still a lot of questions surrounding this new government that we're seeing. I think chief of which is, can they really work together? Because UMNO and PAS worked together in the opposition, but can they extend that same cooperation to the federal government? Are there any issues that you see might be sticking points between them?
Well, you know, they worked in between 74 and 78, and then that pact collapsed. Completely different generation of leaders. The fact that they actually did have some sort of agreement in the last general elections, right, to sort of split the vote for Pakatan means that they are in agreement on a lot of things. And when you use the platform of Malay Muslim unity, that would be the only platform you can work together. And then when you go for general elections again, this is Perikatan Nasional, which is either in a year's time, 2 years' time, or 3 years' time, the discussions might change, the alliances might change. But I think for the purposes of what happened last week, this alliance will stay around for a while.
Yeah, I think my question is a bit different than when you talk about. I really am disturbed when we just talk about politicians, what they're going to do. And, well, who cares about them? They are wakil rakyat, you know. The more important question, can they deal with the rakyat? I'd like to see Hadi Awang appointed as Minister of Unity. Let him go to Dong Jia Zong and call them Musuh-musuh Islam in front of their faces. Usually he does that in the privacy of his own Melayu construct. Now, I think it's a positive thing because I was going to pen an article called Blessings of the New Government. All right, and one
you are
of the
very
things,
optimistic.
Oh, no, I'm just trying to be
a
pragmatic.
Tongue in cheek.
Now, look, for instance, like now we may have a more peaceful nation. The Malays are very happy that there is the dominant government in the and I must add, if we trust the Agong, then it is a legal process that they came in not through the Sheraton coup. It is not a coup. People keep saying it's a coup. It was a coup if it was on Sunday. But I don't think it's a coup anymore once the Agong had already given his due process. And so when Pakatan Harapan came into power, there was no demonstration by the Malays.
Yeah.
But when this Perikatan Nasional comes into power, I think we should also honour the same thing. We should not have any of these, you know, boisterous demonstrations, although it is okay to have it. But we should give them the benefit of the doubt. And we need to draw up some plans for them to work. I mean, we need to work with them. They want to be the government? Fine. Let's work with them and see how far they can take. At least we have a peaceful nation in that sense. And this kind of peace, we can do it in a construction. But if you keep telling that they're going to do bad, they're going to do bad, they're going to do bad, they're negative and negative and negative, they will be negative. Okay, so I think we have an opportunity there. And the other blessing is that now we have the Pakatan people, you know, calm down lah. Now maybe we can see the ceramah of Amanah going back and things like that. So there's a lot of blessings there. We are in a new dawn. Okay, and I like to see us apa nama, until we make a law that says you cannot jump party and then you have to ni, you're gonna have to live with that. This is a new government. It is a legitimate government, and insofar as we
the process can, is
the process is concerned, let's work with them. Let's invite them to BFM. You know,
absolutely. If any members of the new coalition would like to come on BFM, we'd certainly welcome them here. The question I think and the concern that has been raised is particularly over passes. Well, I mean, if you put aside the concerns over UMNO and the ongoing court cases, it's also what PASS will do in the federal government. Excuse me, because there have been concerns raised that perhaps we could see a revival of RUU 355, for example. Is that something that you think
don't
might be
worry
likely?
About the RUU 355? They want Mercedes. They don't want RU 355. Okay?
And yet they've been very consistent.
No,
about what
they have
want
not been consistent, because if you look at the way that they threw it into Parliament, okay, and it was just to get the Malays.
Yeah, on their side.
It was very effective. It was great. It was an excellent Academy Award performance. Okay, don't worry about this. They're not going to do it. Okay, but putting people in prison for not praying Friday prayers, yes, but not this RUU 355 cutting of hands and things like that. That will, I don't think, will happen at all. Okay,
yeah, so I think at the end of it, the professor's right. They're a bit more pragmatic. They will rattle. They'll make the noise. But they want to be part of the government forever. This is the first time PASS is part of a federal government since 1977, a long, long time ago. And you know, it's a taste of power. Happened to Amanah too. When they got to power, they stopped doing their groundwork. PASS in Kelantan and Terengganu, they kept power and they rewarded themselves with a Mercedes-Benz. You know, everybody can talk about the afterlife, but, you know, you still got to take care of this life. And Mercedes-Benz helps more than putting laws to cut off people's limbs.
I guess the other big question mark now is how this new coalition is going to manage the cabinet positions. You know, who is going to get what? Now, Professor, you mentioned that you'd like to see Dato' Hadi Awang, Dato' Hadi Awang in a national unity position. I think that was a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Mm. But are there positions that you would like to see go to particular parties in order to perhaps preserve the stability of the nation?
Well, if I were Muhyiddin, and thinking about, on one hand, of course, now you're a prime minister. First rule of prime minister is, who are the wolves that are going to replace you? You know, that's number one. You're going to have to deal with that. But of course, that's off the media. But the other thing is that you're going to have to be a bit more inclusive. Okay? And you might, now you have all this, the Azmin people, the Ahmad Saifuddin and all that. Well, you can use them because they were actually part of the civil society before this. And definitely they will get positions and all that.
Yeah.
You could also try to get certain people in the civil society to, you know, embroider the thing. Of course, the Chinese, the MCA, the Gerakan are all embroidery.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be just
window dressing.
You know, window dressing. But if you could get people, you know, like what Mahathir did with Latifah Koya and Art Harun, then you could actually send a message across. And that's where I said to the civil society, hey, guys, keep cool lah. We need to actually work. I mean, this is a legal government here. Yeah. And they are our government, like it or not. So we need to be a bit more beradab. You know, beradab means be courteous.
Be more civil,
you may be critical, but the last time when in PA you berasa people like, you know, teruk-teruk sangat, it's been like Mazli Malik, you know, and I don't think that was called for. Okay, even though he may have made some very bad decision, but it's not right to be like that, you know. And so again, with people like PASS, with Hadi Awang, a person what people call Tok Guru and whatever and things like that, you need to have a certain decorum in order to deal with these kinds of
I guess you're right there, but I guess that also extends to the fact that a lot of people over the past week felt that what was going on was very unprincipled. Anything talking about being civil, being gentlemanly, what they did to Dr. Mahathir was not quite cricket, so to speak, to use a parlance of Edie's use. There's so many discussions and arguments either side, right? And you're right, we have a legal government recognized by the King of Malaysia, that this man commands likely to command a majority in Parliament. And going forward, how's that going to be? And to answer your question about the cabinet, the makeup, I think the reality is this. All the top party leaders will get something quite dominant and strong. I think from what I understand, Dato' Sri Azmin Ali will probably get finance. UMNO is the biggest party in this new coalition. They might get a deputy prime ministership, and now it's divided as to who would get it.
Anything as controversial as Lim Guan Eng's appointment to...
I'm sure it'll be controversial, because the reality is, I think you read the papers this morning and overnight, the portals and all that. They are saying let the court cases continue, right? Mm-hmm. Because they want vindication. They want to be cleared in the court process and say, look, you can't charge me anymore. I've been declared innocent. So that process will take some time. But definitely, UMNO wants a few dominant seats in the cabinet. PAS wants a few. Off the top of my head, I think UMNO will get Deputy Prime Minister. They will get the Home Ministry. They're very strong there. I think PAS will get Defence Ministry job. I'm not sure whether Tuan Guru Haji Adi Awang wants to be the unity
That's
minister.
That's my vote,
okay. You know, maybe you never know. Maybe Tan Sri Muhyiddin surprised everyone by coming out from being...
Hey, I'm in the MPKR, you know, Majlis Perundingan Keharmonian Rakyat. Okay. So I'll work with him.
So, you know, they might change the composition now. You know, they might kick you out and put someone else. You never know.
Fine.
But realistically, next few days, they're going to do horse trading about the cabinet. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you can have a clearer picture how this cabinet will be. And then we'll see how it goes.
And where does Bersatu fit into all of this? Because now they obviously have the top post of the country. But seeing as they're the newest party into this coalition, you know, how much of a representation do you expect to see from them in cabinet?
Well, they've got 30 MPs at the last count. They will take what they have had previously, right? The jobs they have, as particularly... more importantly, is where they shine among the larger Malay community. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about Enterprises Minister, Finance Minister, maybe MITI, Trade Ministry, maybe Rural Development again. They want to hold that because, as Prof said, their wolves are there. If you control the economy, you have a head start above the rest.
Mm-hmm. What about Professor? What do you think about this? You know, how does Bersatu fit into this? Will they actually be able to bridge, kind of find a middle ground between UMNO and PAS?
I think they will not find much of a middle ground. I mean, if you are in a den of thieves, you know, with or the mafia groups and things like that. I mean, you will know not
you
to trust one another.
You said you have a chance, and now you're saying you're in a den of thieves.
No, den of thieves means that it's a pragmatic. When I say it means chance, they are wakil rakyat. We are supposed to be the boss. We tell them what to do. How they do it is within their own den of thieves. That's another matter. So what I'm trying to say here is that the mistrust between them, with the hunger for power and with the vanity that they have. Of course, I don't think that they will have a harmonious relationship, unless, as I said, Muhyiddin introduced some new things, like putting in certain new people. You know, probably to put Jahabar Sadiq on as a minister of communication or something like that. You know, you have to put in some new elements.
Mm. Like if what not, Dr. Mahathir did, as you mentioned.
That's
earlier.
Correct.
Yes,
yeah. You know, so you have to fire the imagination of the people. And then you have this idea that some parts of you are beholding to you in that sense.
Yeah.
And you can control the government in that and also give some sort of credence and credibility to the people. I think that's quite important. We cannot write them off by saying, oh, this is what the words that you used originally. They said unfair,
unprincipled,
you know, things like that. Yeah. Principals and politician? Are you?
Are you naive, right? No, we're not.
Yeah, but will say, for example, putting into place appointees like Latifa Koya? Will it be able to rescue the image of this current coalition? I mean,
I think keeping them on their jobs would probably help at this point in time. Not sacking anyone appointed by Dr. Mahathir would help. Critically, the ones that went into the economic side, the PNBs, the Khazanas, Latifah Koya, Art Harun and all, that would help this government a lot.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've been speaking with Jahanbah Sadiq, founder of the Malaysian Insight, and Professor Dr. Tajuddin Muhammad Rasti, professor of architecture at UCSI University and social commentator. Don't go away, because after the 8:30 news, we'll be continuing this conversation with what's next in Malaysian politics. Be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to this extended version of The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark, and today I'm speaking with Jahanbah Sadiq, founder of the Malaysian Insight, as well as Professor Dr. Tajuddin Muhammad Rasti, professor of architecture at UCSI University and social commentator. Thank you again for joining me this morning, gentlemen. We've covered quite a lot of ground so far today. Now, and most recently, we were talking about Perikatan Nasional, you know, whether or not they'll be able to perform in government, you know, what can we expect from them. But I think we also need to talk a little bit about Pakatan Harapan, because now that they are effectively back in the opposition seats,
somewhere they're quite used to.
They are quite familiar with it. What can we expect from them now that they've had a taste of what it's like to be in federal government?
Well, they obviously want to go back to Putrajaya. They've already announced they're going to do a series of roadshows and get back to the kind of stuff that the professor said they did before the elections. And they will continue with that for sure, and try to tell the people across the nation that they were cheated. Anwar Ibrahim was cheated. Dr. Mahathir was tricked. That whole work. Now, whether that will wash with the people at this point in time, I think it would in urban areas. The fact that they neglected rural areas somewhat might make their message a bit won't be accepted as so warmly.
I guess because the question is also now, should they be trying so hard to get back into government, or should they also, or should they focus perhaps on being a strong opposition, particularly if as you say, Professor Tajuddin, this current government is a legitimate one and we should give them a chance?
Mm. No, just to look at the question you asked Jahanbah just now about the PH, what they would do. Okay, I advised the Perikatan Nasional, now I'm advising PH, okay? So I think the PH should leave Amanah in Semenanjung to do their damage control that they did not, you know, do with the Malays, with their ceramah, with all their forums, and they're quite good at it. And I hope to see Muhammad Sabu giving in ceramah and all that again. And that's quite effective. The other group, the DAP and those others, should concentrate on Sabah and Sarawak, giving the idea and the impression that it is not impossible for them to be the kings of Malaysia, rather than, it belongs to Semenanjung. I am very serious when I said that the narrative must be changed. Now, here we're trying to still deal with the narrative of Malay and Islam. But eventually, if we're going to go anywhere, we need to tone down on that narrative. Yeah. Come on, I mean, we had 60 years of that. All right. We had 60 years of this Malay narrative. We had, 30, 40 years of some Islam narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm a Muslim. I was part of the Islamic Reformation. But I do see that certain things are going to be not so good if we are going to continue with the same kind of thing.
Yes.
We need to introduce a different...
a wider Malaysian
perspective for that matter. I even wrote about Bahasa Malaysia, not Bahasa Melayu. Bahasa Malaysia once was comprised of words from 9 different civilizations.
Yeah.
But now, why can't they comprise words from the 39 ethnic groups of our country, so that they own the language? And Hang Tuah were alive and talk in BFM, you wouldn't even understand his Bahasa Malaysia, because it's Bahasa Melayu. He's not speaking Bahasa Malaysia.
Yeah.
So Bahasa Malaysia is for Malaysia, and we are in Malaysia, not in Tanah Melayu anymore.
We have seen some comments this morning on Twitter as well as WhatsApp, saying that, you know, this particularly addressing what you were saying, Professor, which is that this current Perikatan Nasional is a legitimate government, because we have people saying we didn't vote for them. This is not my government. So how does that, particularly with the accusation that this is a backdoor government, that they didn't come in with the will of the people, you know, what's your take on that?
I was already warning of a backdoor government way back a year ago. And I was asking the civil society, look, we need to have forums on this backdoor government, because I knew what PPBM was going to do, and also with Azmin and all that. Mm. So I said, look, we have to have this forum in order to tell these people that, you know, the civil society is not going to accept. A backdoor government is what the Sheraton move was. But this one is different. This one, they decided to, you know, to combine together. All right. And then, as I said, the most important thing, that it had gone through a process. And unless and until we have a law that says once you jump ship, you have to, you know, vacate your
parliamentary seat, yeah,
your wakil rakyatship, then this is the thing that we have to accept. When they say that we did not vote this government, what do you mean you didn't vote the government? You voted for PPBM. And PPBM is still there and it is still here. So they were part. In sense, if there were no PPBM, I said that in my article, Blessings of a New Government, we should be thankful that we had 22 months.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, without those PPBM, we wouldn't even have any months. Okay? Yeah. And if we were too quick, then we wouldn't even have a year.
Right.
At least we got 2 years. So we'll have to look at it philosophically. In that regard, I'm not trying to be good on good terms with the new Perikatan or whatever. Whichever government comes in, I mean, you have to accept that this is a legitimate government.
I think the reality that a lot of people don't realize is that this country is maturing politically. That mm-hmm. that we going forward from May 2008, we're going to have post-election coalitions coming up, that people will realign themselves because they are not happy with each other. And this happens a lot in Europe. We will find alignments changing all the time, mm-hmm. one. Two, going into parliament when it finally convenes, you're going to have the bench, the government bench and opposition bench split almost evenly across, right down the line. And there's going to be very boisterous, exuberant, strong opposition and a government that's trying to keep its majority. This is what's going to happen to us. And the reality is, you say, yeah, I didn't vote for this government. But the professor's right. You voted for these parties, right? So that's where we are today.
So I think there is also, I think over this recent week and continuing as we look forward to see whether or not there will be a March 9th parliamentary sitting or whether it'll be delayed, there is a very prevalent atmosphere of uncertainty and in some cases as well fear. And it does seem that the Malaysian society is, to a large extent, built on this kind of fear. You know, fear of the Bumiputras losing their special privileges, fear of non-Malays or minorities becoming second-class citizens, some would say even more so than they already are. So is there a way that we can perhaps change this narrative as we head forward into this future?
Yes, definitely. In my article, hopefully being published tomorrow in The Star, is about a nation at a crossroad. And one of the things that I said that forging ahead, we need to teach our children about what I call a shared history. A shared history is about, if you don't know the history of the Murut people, then there's a problem. You don't have that. Number two, a shared history is also, if it's May 13, everybody is at fault. You have to have a narrative of that scene. Now, how to teach when it's very difficult to change the syllabus of the public education system? That is where civil society and our matured Malaysian community, we have our own teaching aspect. We have private universities that can take on modules that I've suggested tomorrow in my article. We have civil society who can organize forums or workshop or even a summer camp for our children. We have to do things ourselves. I keep saying to many of in my speeches that the country belongs to us. Our country, our fault. Not Azmin or not Mahathir or not Anwar. It's our fault. Okay, so we need to change by changing ourselves. It is politics there. Party mana nak monitor? Who cares? In Japan, they don't care. You know, you just do. You open your corporate, you become rich, you do whatever you want to do and things like that.
Yeah.
These people are just cranny.
Yeah, I think that the other aspect is that politicians, civil society sometimes stoke fears.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with social media, with radio stations and portals asking everybody for their views, you get everybody airing their views, right? Without basis. It's all based on conjecture, speculation that this might happen, that might happen. We don't know any of this for a fact. We look at the history of all these people and you think, yeah, you know, it's most likely they will do this.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is they're in government now. They're in power. They want to keep power. They have to placate the people of Sabah, Sarawak, Kuala Lumpur, Selangor, Penang, Johor. So they will be quite pragmatic, you know. But as long as everybody airs their views without making an informed guess of it, right? Rather, they're just basically saying their thing. You know, it's BFM. I used to say BFM must have the sticker called Brain Fart Musings. But, you know, and that's how I feel most of the time.
Well, thank
Sorry
you.
About that.
Well, thank you nevertheless very much for speaking to us this morning. I've been speaking with Jahawar Sadiq, founder of the Malaysian Insight, and Professor Tajuddin Mohamed Rasti, professor of architecture at UCSI University and social commentator. This has been The Breakfast Grill, and I'm Lynn Mark for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.